Hello. Once again for the transcript, Wednesday, November 20th, 10:30 a.m. This is GNSO IRTP Community Workshop. Retiro B.
Hello all, this is Mikey O'Connor for the transcripts. I see a bunch of good friends and old friends on the Adobe Room. And I think we're close enough that we'll probably get underway. James is scrambling to get plugged in, but I think we can kick off the recording and do the usual preliminaries. Natalie, are you the caller of the roll? No. No, because... Because you can't speak this time. Okay, so do you want me to do that stuff? Is that the scheme? Or go around the room? Cool, that's a good idea. All right, so let me just set things up. This is the IRTP PDP Part D meeting for Wednesday, fill in the date, 20th of November 2013. And what we'll do is we'll go around the room and people can identify themselves for the transcript. I'll start. I'm Mikey O'Connor from the ISPCP. And we'll just start that way and go this way.
Holly Reich from ALAC.
James Bladle from GoDaddy.
Lars, you want to chime in? Yeah, it's the green one.
Me?
Yeah.
This is Lars from I Can Stuff.
Graham Bunton from Two Cows.
Volker Greimer from Key Systems, GNSO Counselor.
Marika Konings, I Can Staff.
Tsumla Budu from the ZA Central Registry. I'm part of the DOR Africa legal and policy team.
Cool. Welcome.
Thanks.
And there are
two folks in the back. You want to just walk up to the
maybe join us at the table? There's plenty of seats.
Plenty of space in the
on
table.
The, one side.
Some people are here just for electrical power.
Some people just want the Wi-Fi and the...
Erica Randall, ICANN staff.
That's great. Okay. As usual, we'll take a pause to take a look at the agenda.
Let's get an introduction, please, from the folks on the phone.
Oh, yes. Go ahead. Can people on the phone just clash with each other and announce yourself to the rest of us?
Barbara Knight is here and representing the registry stakeholder group.
Thanks, Barbara. Is there anybody else on the phone? That's it. Okay. Cool. Thanks for catching me on that. You know, one of the things, I went through the leadership development thing earlier this week, and I discovered an interesting thing, which is that I do fine on the phone, but when I'm face-to-face, I'm getting a whole lot more stimulation, and I totally lose track of what's going on. So if I completely go off the rails, just give me a nudge. What I probably ought to do is just put blindfold on or something. Anyway. Next up is any changes to your statement of interest and a quick look at the agenda, which are both over on the right side of the Adobe screen. So we'll take a pause to see if there are any issues with either of those. James has got his hand up. Go, James.
Good morning. James Bladel from GoDaddy and co-chair. I just wanted to not necessarily make a modification to statement of interest, but a more of a declaration that both of your co-chairs, Mikey and myself, will be joining the GNSO Council effective 4.5 hours from now. That's not unprecedented that councilors would also be chairs of working groups. I'm kind of looking for staff to give me the history here. But it does perhaps create an interesting situation, let's say, this time next year or a little further down the road when we have submitted our final report and final recommendations to the GNSO Council coming from the people who determined consensus level support in this particular working group. And you know, I don't think that any of this is a problem, but I want to make sure that it is in our minds that we are thinking about these potentials. You know, they say with conflicts of interest that 90% of it is just perception, something is happening that's not on the table. So I wanted to put that out there and certainly remind everyone that it is well within the prerogative of the working group membership to ask one or more of their co-chairs at any time for any reason to step aside if they're not comfortable with that arrangement. So Marika's raising her hand. I think she's going to ask one or both of us to step aside, Mikey.
I'm sure that's right. Go ahead, Marika.
No, this is Marika. This is just to confirm or clarify that the working group guidelines actually specifically indicate that council members are more than welcome to join working groups and even chair them. So from that perspective, there are no restrictions or limitations just because of the fact that you're a council member, but I understand what you're saying.
And certainly not trying to, quote chapter and verse of either the GNSO PDP working group guidelines or the council guidelines, but wanted to make sure that we are being as transparent as possible in the interest of full disclosure and making sure that everyone, if there's a situation where someone feels uncomfortable with an arrangement, that they are certainly aware of their ability to speak out against it and change it.
Thanks, James. It's always good to get those puzzlers out there. I'm going to... I see Holly in the queue, but before I go to the queue, we've got a few more people that just joined the meeting. I just want to have you run down the line, quickly introduce yourself for the transcript so we know who's here.
Angie Graves, BC.
Simonetta Bartager, Register Stakeholder Group.
Christine Doreen, National Arbitration Forum.
Bob Mountain, Afternic.
Tim Cole, ICANN.
And I don't know about you, but it's always neat to put names and faces together. You know, we've worked together in some cases for years with never meeting each other before. And I just love that part. Go ahead, Holly.
Actually, just a change. I have stopped being chair of AP Rallo, and I've joined the leadership team for ALAC.
Congratulations on that. That's always fun. Volker, go ahead.
I don't have an update, but I would like to take this opportunity to thank ICANN staff for making this session available at a time where people are actually awake.
Hooray! And I'm gratified to note that we have precisely the same level of attendance no matter what time of day we have it, thus showing just exactly how fascinating the work that we do on this working group is. So. Anything else in terms of... go ahead, Marika.
This is Marika, and it's maybe something as well as, you know, several of you now are coming onto the council, and because, as I said, we always struggle in finding time for working group meetings, while at the same time, we always say, you know, policy development is the most important thing we do. But it's really hard, indeed, to get these kind of slots and not have, you know, 20 million other things that are all more important and more interesting opposite it. So having some kind of push maybe at some point from the council to convey it and saying, look, it would be really great if we could actually maybe carve out a dedicated slot or time somewhere on the schedule that would be solely dedicated to face-to-face meetings of working groups to make that happen. And you know, maybe it has to sometimes happen a little bit early, but at least get it on the radar screen that this is really important and a lot of work can get done in this way.
The trick there is that we are now in a room with all the people that work on all the working groups. So if we schedule them parallel, we might as well schedule them in parallel all in the same room. Sorry, I'm being facetious. Okay, anything else in terms of statement of interest, agenda, sort of the getting ready stuff? Okay. I've got a little slide deck that most of us have seen. I'm going to run through it anyway because I went through it with the council. James and I went through it with the council, and when I was speaking, I was fairly casual in the way that I talked it off, and I shouldn't have been because it turned out that we got into some pretty interesting discussions. So I'm going to take a little bit more care in my piece of it. James, do you want me to run through the front part, or do you want to do the front?
Sure. No, go ahead, Mikey.
Okay. Let me see. Lars is way ahead of me. Cool. So this is just sort of the story till now. We are the last. We're the caboose on the train. That's what we like to think of ourselves as. Of a pretty long series of PDPs. We started this one in February, and we've got 4 out of 6 charter questions done, and I'm not sure that we're fully agreed, but we're certainly in a pretty late draft on those. And then we've got one big issue that we're still working on, but this is one of those ones where when we pull this string, we may find other things attached. So I'm not sure that we're quite there, but we'll get to that in a second. So next slide would be good. These are examples of string. These are examples of things that begin to branch outward. So one of the big broad questions that we're going to tackle is the overall structure of the transfer dispute resolution policy. And I'm not going to cover all that history because this is among friends. And the other piece of string is that at the very end, I think what we're going to do as a working group is look back across all of the prior ones and reconcile some, see if we can discover and reconcile any inconsistencies in the whole pile. Hopefully we won't find any, and hopefully we won't have to change much, especially things that have already been implemented by registrars, because that gets very tricky. But we are going to take that look just to make sure that there's integrity there. Okay, Lars, I think we can do the next one. I think this is really the agenda for today that we put together to just structure our conversation and our thinking about what we should look at. And there's really 3 big questions. What about the transfer dispute resolution policy? And really it's really 2 questions. It's really what about the transfer dispute resolution policy and a bunch of associated questions, and at the very end, should registries continue to be in the dispute resolution chain? But as you can see, there are lots of interesting questions within that TDRP pile. That we've begun to, you know, I think we've made a lot of progress in the last few weeks structuring the questions
Because I think having that structure helps us have the conversation about how to answer them. And really the goal, I think, for today is partly to see each other face-to-face, welcome Simonetta back, because she has a standing conflict with this meeting, and so this is a chance to hear from Simonetta, and really just take advantage of the luxury of a face-to-face meeting where we can have a conversation and see each other, which will, as I say, will be extremely distracting for me, but I'm going to do my best. I think I'll just leave it open, take a cue. For folks in the room, it would help me if you would use the Adobe Room for the cue, just so I can keep track of it. That's another thing that I've gotten so reliant on, that when I'm not, when I don't have it available, I really mess up the cue pretty badly. And James is first in line. Go ahead.
Thanks, Mikey. And this is James speaking for the folks on the phone. So just to recap a little bit of the conversation that occurred over the weekend when we presented this summary to council, and then maybe a conversation that Mikey and I had coming in the front door. When we got to the subject of the TDRP, there was a very spirited exchange or questions regarding the downstream implications of what we were, proposing, and all of the potential pitfalls that we should be aware of and perhaps try to avoid. And the analogy I used to Mikey is that I don't think our working group is, going off the road, but it feels like we're on one of those roads in Peru, that's on the cliff, and we're trying to pass a truck that's full of chickens. We have to be very, very careful the next few working groups. We have to proceed, I think, very cautiously, because we've always sort of just looked at TDRP as this is the mechanism that undoes transfers. But as we expanded in IRTPC, as we expanded transfers to include registrant changes, and if we've, handcuffed TDRP as the undo mechanism for a registrant change, now we are tiptoeing into a very sensitive area outside of just, fraudulent transfers, outside of domain name hijackings, into into basically a broader range of just civil disputes. Perhaps, we can, and I say we now, maybe GoDaddy could share some data or some experience here, but I have had conversations with folks internally who have some pretty scary stories to tell about business partnerships gone bad, or divorces, or heirs fighting over a will. This is potentially what's on the other side of that chicken truck if we're not careful, in doing this. And so I think I just wanted to put my note out there that maybe we just take a look at this, take a look at exactly what we're trying to solve, maybe create some tests early on for TDRP to say this is starting to look like something that is beyond the scope of ICANN to solve and starting to look like more of a real world brick and mortar problem that needs to be addressed elsewhere, like in small claims court or something like that. So just putting that out there on the record that this is where I think the working group stands. All the rest of this stuff, I really do believe we've either looked at it, we've analyzed it, we've spoken with compliance, we've gathered data, and as a group, we're all nodding our heads. Yeah, this needs to be fixed, or that's working fine. This one issue, though, I think we need to could undo the whole recipe. So let's just be very cautious. Thank you.
Thanks, James. Q is developing nicely. Christine, go ahead.
Hey, thanks. This is Christine from NAF. So I wanted to just sort of follow on to what you said, James, because when I brought up this idea, and I don't think it was just me, but when I bring up this idea of, as a provider, we see, those sorts of questions. Those are the three circumstances, the circumstances you named, are the three that we see that also get kicked out of UDRP. And those are the ones that people are constantly saying, well, now what? What do I do? If I can't take it to UDRP and I can't take it to TDRP, where does it go? And I'm in agreement with you that I don't know that this is the best policy for it, but I wanted to make sure that we at least explored it to see if this is the best policy. But it might be that we decide that this isn't it, and there is no remedy for people who have been screwed over by their web provider or their web developer or their business partner or their ex-spouse. And maybe they are stuck going to court, and maybe there is nothing. So I just want to echo that, because I know I've been kind of one of those people who've said, well, these are the disputes we see. And I just want to make it clear that I see these disputes, and I wanted to wonder if these belong in this policy, but I also see that they may not.
Thanks, Christina. Simonetta?
I was wondering where the original question came from, because something must have raised the question that the TDRB should potentially be open to registrants. Why was that coming up? Because that may point to where the real problem is. And then I agree with what you just said. And it might also help to look at data from big registrars like GoDaddy or 1&1, where I'm not really interested in here's how many cases of disputes have arisen, but how many of them are actually things that that are these type questions where you really can't make a decision. I mean, you aren't really in a position to decide between the two quarreling parties here which one is right and which one's not right. Neither do I think the registries would be that entity that really can resolve that conflict. And or someone like you, I don't think this can be solved that way. But if we find out where the question came from to begin with, maybe there's something else to it.
Just responding to Simonetta's question, where the question came from, and now Mikey can give the history lesson as well, that this was, you know, when we did our original review was done after the adoption of the policy in 2004. But having written as well the issue report, I think where it came from, but I think we don't have any hard data, but the main reason was that we had some reports that registrant wanted a TDRP to be initiated, but their registrar basically didn't want to do it for them, for, you know, whatever reason it was, and that gave a sense that maybe there is a need to open it up for registrants so they can decide themselves whether they want to initiate a proceeding without having to wait or needing the approval of the registrar to do so. But again, I don't think we have any like hard data saying, you know, we receive 100 requests from registrants to initiate one, or where they're saying that the registrar is not doing it for them. But I think that was the anecdotal information or feedback that was received, I think, that inspired this question that it should be investigated, should it be opened up or not.
Simonetta, you look like you want to come back. Do you want to?
Well, then if this is where it's coming from, again, I don't know if we can, but the next question that comes to my mind is it that the registrars just basically don't want to deal with their customer and they want to make it difficult? Or is it that the registrar looks at that problem and says to that customer, you're crazy and I can't resolve it, and I also know that the registry won't be able to resolve it, so therefore you should really not have access to this way to resolve your dispute, because we don't think that it can be resolved that way. So without knowing that, you can't really go back to answer your question, which was, is this even the right policy to address this kind of a dispute? Because I'm just thinking, if these two business partners are quarreling about something, GoDaddy won't want to decide which one's right. The registry won't want to decide which one's right. They just get into legal trouble. And therefore, it's not really a good way to resolve the conflict for anybody.
Mikey's scrambling with physical space. Volker, go ahead.
Actually, I defer my place in the queue to you, because you have been waving longer than I had raised my hand.
Yeah, sorry about that. Go ahead, Holly.
I can be incredibly patient at times. I'm having chatted with a guy who's a member of ALAC, and who's been involved in the sort of domain business, he gets a lot of complaints of people who've just lost their domain name. Now, I think it's perfectly reasonable to say if the reason you've lost your domain name is a business partner, a business gone bad, we shouldn't touch it. Just that's, you know, that's the chicken, that's basically you're over the cliff, forget it. But if it's something that the registrar has, or that has happened between registries and registrars, if it's actually an ICANN problem and somebody won't take action on behalf of the registrant, we shouldn't be saying we can't fix it. And to me, the jurisdiction is the problem within the ICANN remit, in which case at least be able to go to the ombudsman and say, have a look at this to see, is it reasonable? Have a kind of a place to go, and then a reason why you're not somebody who's got an objective look saying, no, that's not reasonable, or look, it's between you and your business partner, it's between you and your wife, it's you're bloody incompetent or something, but it's not an ICANN related problem. So the fence is, it's something that can be fixed that's within ICANN's remit. I mean, that's the kind of circle I draw. But if it is within ICANN's remit, then we shouldn't be saying too hard. We ought to be able to fix it somehow.
Thanks. On to you, Volker.
Okay, maybe first one point to the where it came from that this might not be the right process. I mean, Mikey did a great job by trying to insert the registrant into the TDIP, but the longer we looked into this, the more it became apparent that the TDIP is mainly designed to complain about process failures, i.e. Where registrars have not followed the correct process, and therefore it's a dispute between registrars. Inserting the registrant into such a process, which is not designed to deal with the specific cases the TDIP is originally designed for, made us at least think about the TDIP probably not being the correct venue for this. This being said, there might still be a different venue or a different solution to the problem of domain names having been stolen that could be within the ICANN remit, which could either be a different policy, best practice recommendation, or what I've been warming up to, a requirement for registrars to lock a domain name for a certain time when a complaint about ownership is being brought, and if then a civil case is not being shown to have been brought between the complainants, between the complainant and the current owner, then the lock would be removed after a given time, or not. So basically, it would resemble the current process after a UDIP, where the losing registrant would have the opportunity to fight a UDIP decision in court within 10 days. A similar process could be adopted, where a registrar would be required to lock a domain name against transfers or owner changes if a complaint is being brought for a certain time, and then the complainant has to follow through with the court case. That would prevent any further hijacking, in my view, would lock the domain name against further abuse and protect the potential rights of the registrant and the complainant, whoever may be right in the end. But that is not a decision a registrar can take. And I think also for an arbitration panel, also the wrong decision to make. It's not that, because these are not clear-cut cases. These are cases that are usually ownership disputes that should be resolved in court, in my view.
I'm going to hijack the queue in front of my co-chair just to ask one question. And that is, and I'm primarily going to ask it of Christine, but anybody else is welcome to chime in. I'll start this off by saying that I find myself in the position of my opinion is changing, so I'm pretty unfrozen at the moment and sort of curious about some things. The reason the UDR, and I'm going to play my version of history. I want Christine to verify that I've got that right, and then see if there's a parallel there. My understanding of the UDRP is that essentially it's a more focused court that's smarter about a very narrowly defined issue. Because taking a UDRP issue to just any old court on the planet would result in really bad court proceedings because the court would be clueless. And so this is sort of an intermediate step on the way to still to a clueless court, but at least most of the time the dispute resolution process would be more well-crafted and built with people that have deeper understanding. The TDRP is starting not to feel like quite right for all the reasons that Volker rattled off. But I'm wondering if it would be useful to consider setting up something comparable where registrants, when they have a dispute between themselves, have a clueful dispute resolution process available that's essentially totally outside of this policy, with the exception that it would be the end game for the registrant transfer stuff that we built in IRTPC. Because I think one of the reasons that we as a working group are under a little bit of pressure right now is because we built something in IRTPC, but we didn't really, what we did in that one is we said, oh, well, the TDRP will work fine for that, so that's what we'll use. And what we're discovering now is it's not so fine. And the question in my mind right now is whether we should build a clueful court to Holly's point. You know, we shouldn't just throw up our hands and say this is too hard. Or whether we should just throw up our hands and say this is too hard, take it to clueless courts and be done with it. And I'm framing it that way because it would be interesting to know, in the case of the UDRP, the reason that we need a court with a clue is because the UDRP is a very unusual kind of dispute. In the case of a dispute between registrants, I'm not sure that's so unusual. It's a divorce, it's business failure, and maybe normal courts would be clueful, in which case maybe we shouldn't go that way. So that's a long preamble and then throwing the ball to my buddy Christine, who I know will handle it perfectly.
Oh, I don't know about that. This is Christine from NAF, so I'm trying to keep in my head all the points you made. So I think you're right about the court of sort of focused on trademark domain name stuff going on. The other thing the UDRP brings to the table that sometimes we forget about is this concept of mutual jurisdiction. So one of the things the UDRP did was it made it possible for parties who could not normally participate meaningfully in any sort of court process. It gives them an option that allows them to sort of supersede the bounds of jurisdiction. So that's one thing besides the focused court that UDRP brings. So the idea of creating a second sort of focused court for these transfer-related disputes, I think it's beneficial because it brings that mutual jurisdiction aspect back into it. Because that's really the key. The whole reason the UDRP was written is because people didn't want to go sue everybody in Virginia. And so, because you can get, you know, a fairly decent trademark opinion on this, at least in the U.S. and Europe and, you know, et cetera. So I think that we need to think about that. So when you throw people to the court system, you leave open this issue of jurisdiction, unless there's some other way to contract around just jurisdiction. Because you theoretically would possibly have two contracted parties as far as registrants go. But I don't know, because once one's lost a domain name, now they're not maybe under contract anymore. So you've got some issues there. So I'm with you in that I'm very unfrozen in my thought right now, too, because I'm with you. I really thought that it would, you know, just slide right in, I'm seeing it's not sliding right in, and I think it could be useful to think about something different. The other thing that I just want to throw out there, because I'm in the middle of it right now, is I'm working on building a specialized panel for registry restriction disputes, because the NAF is a provider for registry restriction disputes. So it's not necessarily trademark lawyers, although there are some. It's mostly people who are, you know, maybe even in the position that Volker's in, where you're working with a registry or whatever. So our registrars, I guess. I'm sorry. So, but it's people who are really familiar with registries and registrars and the processes that ICANN goes through, and the negotiations and how this works. So it is possible, because I'm doing it, to build a specialized panel that knows about transfers and knows about registration agreements and knows about registrar and transfer agreements and those sorts of things. So it's possible, I think, to build a specialized panel that would deal with these types of situations while preserving this mutual jurisdiction element that's so important for UDRP. I think I addressed all your thoughts.
Spectacular, as always. And deepest apologies to James, my co-chair, because not only did I jump him in the queue, but then I stuck Christina in there, too. It's a double whammy. Sorry about that. Go ahead,
James. It's all right. Thanks, Mikey. And, you know, it's a good problem to have in our IRTP, where we have so many people that want to weigh in on things, because we haven't always had that situation. So I just wanted to follow up to, I think, going back to some of what Volker was saying, I think even going back to your comment, Holly, and then maybe put a button on it with Mikey, and then propose some ways that we can start to bring this in for a landing and start to navigate our way out of these rocks. First thing is, when we listed all of those different situations, I wasn't trying to give you the impression that we should avoid this because it's difficult. More along the lines of, because I don't believe ICANN has the authority in those situations, and we shouldn't be seeking to expand that. So we're all I think synchronized on that one. But to Simonetta's point, the root cause is, or at least as I understand it, is that we have this mountain of complaints coming into ICANN regarding disputes on who is the rightful registrant of this particular domain name. They're coming into registrars. They're coming into ICANN. They're coming into registries. They're flooding the court system. And then we have this policy, which is much narrower in its scope and what it's trying to do. As I think Volker and Mikey pointed out, it's more of a process policy. It's, did you follow the process or didn't you? And if you didn't, you have to undo the process. It's not equipped to tackle that or to close that gap in almost all those cases. And so my thinking is, the more I think, and going back to Mikey's point, I find myself changing my thoughts on this as well and thinking, wow, we really waded into something, some deep waters here, and not that it's hard, but that ICANN's a rowboat, you know, and we're playing with battleships. So I come back to one of the proposals that, and I think it's encapsulated in our second bullet point there, is the idea that if the problem that we're trying to address is that registrars are not initiating the TDRP on behalf of their registrants, then require them to do so. And the exemption list would mirror the reasons for denial, but it would be very small, such as you were never listed as the registrant of this domain name, or this domain name expired, or you are still the registrant, or some other sort of, you know, blatantly obvious sorts of things, because there's a lot of reasons why people lose control of domain names. Sometimes their credit card expired, you know, just, you know, it's not necessarily a dispute. But so I keep kind of coming back towards, you know, when faced with so many unknowns and so many variables, maybe the right course is to do as little as possible that you are confident will be a positive development, so as to minimize the law of unintended consequences. So,
without looking at my screen, the great Karnath predicts that Volker's in the queue.
Aha. That was a miracle. Tell me how you do that. just one more thing that I just had a thought rolling around in my head, is that whatever we end up with, a new process, a new policy, a new recommendation, we should bear in mind that the kinds of cases that we're talking about here are not necessarily transfer cases. There may be cases where no transfer has ever taken place, the domain still rests with the registrar, no owner change has taken place. For example, when the domain name is registered in the name of the web host or the programmer who designs the website, these are exactly the same cases if a transfer has taken place or not. So bearing that in mind, we should, I think, move away from the transfer issue and, of course, have something in place to prevent transfers if we end up with that, to prevent further harm and further complication of the issue, but also encompass these other cases as well.
Thanks, Volker. I'm going to go to Christine, and what I will do is I will put myself in the queue.
Thanks.
Go ahead,
Christine. This is Christine, and Volker, that was a great segue to my next point, because we talk a lot about transfer, and we sometimes forget that sometimes it's a non-transfer that's an issue. And I want to bring this up, and I'm going to try to word this so that confidentiality doesn't get breached. But I got a phone call, coincidentally enough, about 2 weeks ago from a registrant who says, I am trying, like the Dickens, to transfer a pretty large-sized portfolio of domain names away from my registrar. My registrar knows I'm trying to do this and will not allow me to transfer. They won't, whatever they have to do, I'm sorry, I'm not super up on that, but they wouldn't unlock them or they wouldn't provide the, whatever it was, they wouldn't allow them to be transferred out because they were the, the largest client or the only client or something. And of course, once the domain names go away, the registrar is in a pickle. And they said, can I file a TDRP on this? And I, crack open the book because, I got the, hyper underlined highlighted version, on my desk. And I'm looking and I'm like, you can try, but that is not one of the itemized things. I said, I'd love to take your money because this is a bazillion domain names, but I wouldn't recommend it. I said, because it doesn't include your registrar isn't responding to you. Even though, so it's not a knack. You didn't get to a knack. It's your own registrar refusing. So, and I don't know, maybe I just don't know too much about what the answer is in that situation. But I just want to say that when we do start looking more deeply at the policy itself, I would like to look at sort of the reasons for bringing a dispute, and would there be other reasons that have arisen that should be included in the master list of types of disputes that could be brought? I don't know. You can tell me I'm crazy, but I thought I'd throw that out there as a little anecdote.
Thanks, Christine. I'm paying James back. He's jumping in front of me.
No, just that, certainly in that situation, that is a failure to execute the policy in the first place, which is a compliance issue.
That's where I told them to go. Yeah, okay. I said, go call compliance. Here's Victor's number.
Sorry for the little sidebar, but I wanted to help that registrant because I'm assuming they're trying to move their names to GoDaddy. Whoever they are.
Don't be so sure about that.
All right, I've got two other registrars over here ready to throw something at you.
Yeah. Thank you. This is Mikey again. One of the things that's in my unfrozen thinking, and we've talked about this on calls fairly recently, is that we've overloaded this policy a little bit. And I think that's part of the problem. So if we said that we are taking apart these threads, that may be the way past that truck full of chickens. That's a pretty vivid picture in my mind, James. Thank you for that. A little earworm. May need one of Emily Taylor's kids' cartoon graphics for us on that for our final report. I'm leaning more and more strongly towards Volker's point of view on the traditional registrar to registrar TDRP problem with maybe just a dash of James's put a little pressure on registrars to actually do it scheme. And when we've talked about this before, Volcker has immediately appeared in the queue saying, watch out, because there are times, you know, if we give registrars completely open access to this, there are going to be times when that, you know, the policy makes us do stupid things. And I think the way to avoid the doing stupid things is to keep this policy narrower rather than broader. I think we head into stupid territory when we broaden the policy. And I think where we got into trouble, and we are going to have to puzzle our way out of it, is when we put the registrant stuff in C. Now we've opened up quite a lot of stupid territory. And so we may want to think about backing out of that driveway somehow. I don't exactly know the mechanics. Pivoting and, you know, then going down the lines that Christine and I were talking about, a different gizmo to handle the registrant-type disputes. And I just sort of want to try that idea out to see if that's a path past those dang chickens. Because if that is, then I think we've got some work to do, but I think the work is fairly straightforward. But, you know, if that's troubling to people, this would be a good time. This is a great time to work this out, partly because it's face-to-face, but also because it's a little bit longer meeting than normal. And so we've got a little bit more flexibility. So let me recap that in fewer words. Refocus the IRTP and its associated TDRP on transfer disputes between registrars, its original purpose. Remove, maybe, but let's try this. Remove the transfer disputes between registrants from this policy. Handle that through a miracle. And then, in order to get the original reason why the for the question about registrants to this policy answered, I tend to agree, this is a change, I tend to agree that we don't want to give registrants access to this policy, but rather put a little bit more pressure on the registrars to grant the requests, even in instances where they think the registrant is crazy. And the one difficulty with that is who pays. Okay, so we've got Holly in the queue, we've got Volcker in the queue, we've got me accidentally in the queue. So who went first? Holly first. Go ahead, Holly.
Ladies before gentlemen. What a gentleman.
Right.
If you open up, close the possibility, write registrants out of the policy, but write in a requirement that the dispute actually be taken, then from a registrant's point of view, and correct me if I'm wrong, for them it becomes a compliance issue. They can go to compliance and say, I have requested X. Compliance then has the ability to look at the factual situation to see if what's really happening is there is a dispute, the registrar has in fact not taken the action they should have, and therefore the mechanism is not particularly costly for a registrant. It becomes a responsibility of compliance to then say, in fact, the rules now say this is a dispute that you should have taken up and you haven't. And then that becomes the mechanism for a registrant having their issue dealt with if it's a legitimate issue. I mean, is that a correct statement?
Close enough for me, yeah. Volker, go ahead.
Totally going off topic of with the current discussion, just something that also popped into the head of my mind. When we started this endeavor, said that this was the IRTP to end all IRTPs, to mop up all remaining issues. And there was an issue that I didn't think of when we started on this, which is something that recently became a problem again and again, which is some registrars charging outrageous fees for allowing a transfer out. Should we maybe also look at that in the course of the IRTP before?
I don't think so.
I thought there was a rule.
Yeah, that's not allowed under the current policy. That's just a file an issue with compliance.
Actually, if you read the FAQ, on the ICANN page, it says there, yes, the registrar is allowed to charge a fee to allow an IN transfer out.
Yeah, but I thought it was reasonable. I thought the word reasonable was in that sentence. Isn't that right?
I think we should exhaust the compliance route first. Yes, for them to affirmatively say they can't do anything before.
Just on the agenda so we have that.
Definitely a good one for the agenda, yeah.
We should pause that until we have the other problem solved, but I just don't want us to clear out the IRTP without at least having looked at that.
That when I turned my mic on, I killed your mic.
No, it's there's always the last two are on. So when you turn yourself on and James turns himself on, he shuts me off.
And I going. Get it. Okay. The new
Wait count. A minute. I have a Mikey mute button over here the whole time.
Shut.
Yeah.
Look at that. It worked. Dang it. That's amazing. Oh. Another reason I don't like face to face meetings. Okay, let's see. What do we got for a queue? Volker, you're really in the queue, or is that left over from last time?
That was this one.
Okay. Christine, go on.
Hi, this is Christine from NAF. The only thing I wanted to address was to Holly's point about the bringing the registry or the complaints to compliance where the registrar is not going to follow through. I would only caution, and I don't know, I mean, maybe we're putting the cart ahead of the horse, but I think what we found is that VeriSign had, almost 100 of the complaints that they've actually handled. So if you put in the policy that now your average registrant can bring a, someone didn't do what I wanted, we have to be concerned that this is going to flood ICANN compliance with frivolous claims. That's my only thing I want to throw out there. I don't think it's necessarily a bad idea. I think we just have to have some. ICANN compliance has a hard enough time staying on top of legitimate UDRP related issues and those sorts of things. So.
Yeah, and before I head to Tim, I think that's one of the reasons we're going to, if we sort of follow these tracks, we're going to have to take a look at the requirements on a registrant to limit frivolous and abusive use of that. So, yes, fully agree. Tim, go ahead.
Thanks. I actually lowered my hand, but only because I don't want to be perceived as giving an official ICANN position on the issue that Volker raised, but there are two sort of competing or somewhat inconsistent factors involved with charging a fee or an exorbitant fee, because on the one hand, ICANN cannot say what a registrar can and can't charge for, so that's the reason for that answer in the FAQ. However, there's also a provision in the policy that says a registrar cannot prevent a transfer based on a future owed fee. And if the fee is for a transfer and the transfer has yet to take place, then they're holding up a transfer for a fee for a future service. And so, in fact, you could very well come up with a ruling that says that they cannot charge an exorbitant fee or a fee. But, again, I'm not giving you a formal interpretation, but that is, I believe, how it has been viewed at times in the past.
Thanks, Tim.
Thank you very much.
That's
And especially since it was given entirely as a personal opinion, and thus you are fully liable for any consequences. Sorry, I just couldn't resist. Okay, the queue is clear. When do we end? Do we end at 11:30?
Noon.
Holy mackerel. Well, you know, it just shows how deeply ingrained that one-hour habit is for us. You know, here we are right on the dot at 1 hour. I don't know, Mr. Co-Chair, what do you think?
Boring. I am not lying, Lars. That's where I was going.
Oh, seriously. I can't believe it. You
no,
too.
I was. You're I just... thought, if we're in the last half hour, why not spend, you know, that time looking and trying to define some concrete steps on what we're going to do next? I think that we have an initial report taking shape. Obviously, we have a pretty big placeholder in here for this conversation that we're just having that needs to be fleshed out. But a number of the other charter questions, I think, are fairly close to being nailed down and don't all have, well, I would say any, but many dependencies with what we're talking about with TDRP. So perhaps, since we're going to go home and then a lot of the Americans are going to stuff themselves with turkey, and then we are going to start to look at Christmas shopping and things like that. I think maybe since we have targeted our initial report for early December, I wonder if that is still in the cards. I wanted to ask this group if we believe that we can wrestle with this particular issue and publish our initial report for December. It sounds to me that where we're sitting now is the answer is no. It makes me think that we should target this particular issue for some sort of resolution by early December so that we can target our initial report for the end of the year. That leaves us, I think, sufficient time to conduct a 45-day public comment and response period in advance of the meeting in Singapore. And then we can incorporate that we'll spend February-ish incorporating that, and then we'll come to Singapore with basically a draft final. So that would be our new calendar, but that would require us to really, after we have our nice big meal, then really sink our teeth into this TDRP issue. So save room. Don't have two slices of pie. Save room for this. You have Thanksgiving in Australia too, right? Just not this time of year. No, Canada has it, but it was in October though. Yeah, so. It's on summer?
So it's like, why
Well, you have Christmas on the beach. I thought you had turkey, maybe you deep fry it. I don't know. Okay, so, Bob, go ahead.
Let me regain control of this before we turn into a culinary debating society.
Yeah, thanks. Sorry, James. I have my hand up in the queue, and I didn't know if you saw it. This is Bob Mountain. You sound like you did what I was going to propose, which is a sort of a work back from if we are targeting Singapore. So what would be the drop-dead date for the initial report? Would it be December or January?
Let's leave this as an action rather than doing it on the fly. I think we can do it sort of the way James did, but, Lars and James and I will take a look at that and back into the dates we need to hit.
My suggestion might be that we not wait until the very last possible time to do it, but we find out give ourselves a little bit of slack space to reach that. But at least we know what the drop dead date is, and we can work around that. So,
I think that's right. I think that if this sort of emerging scheme that's coming out today works, unless we hit another sort of puzzler, that's pretty doable because the rest of the report's in pretty good shape. So, barring surprises, I think. Dropping that into the right slots will work, but I usually have a wall of computer in front of me, and I can put a bunch of stuff up, and I got nothing. So, another drop.
Just very quickly, I think a rough I just looked at the calendar and the submission date. If we wanted to submit an official preliminary final report, we're looking at early January, really, to get the initial report out in order to get the 45 days, rework something in, and republish. Because I believe the meeting is late March, so it's still, early December obviously is no longer doable, but it's still a very tight deadline.
I think we could still...
Doable.
Yeah, we could still certainly give it a try. And I think that, we're right at the point where we've come as a group to pretty deep thinking and pretty deep understanding, and it's sort of see if we can crank out a draft. And if we can, it'd be really cool to hit that date. If we can't, I don't think it's the end of the world, but, it would be really good to sort of move this along. Holly?
Just a question. We've got ITRPC, Report C, which has got registrants in. Are we going to have to do something to say, by the way, we made a mistake, let's take it out?
Yeah, we're going to have to do something about that, because otherwise this whole thing falls apart, I think. Go ahead, Jim.
If I could jump in on that, one of the other topics that we did discuss with the council, and I think they were very receptive to it, was the idea that we might want to put a pause on the implementation of IRTPC, which has been approved by the council, it's been approved by the board, it's just kind of sitting there on the on deck waiting for it to roll out into production. And I think we identified that if you're changing something that's been approved but not implemented yet, maybe you ought to just kind of hold off and change it all at once. And I think that there was heads were nodding around the table that seemed to be a sensible approach rather than change something and change it back. And I think this would definitely fall into that category, Holly, if we said, we kind of glossed over something in IRTPC that as we examined it in the context of TDRP, we want to go back and, unlink those two issues.
Yeah, I think that's right. Bob, go ahead.
I guess, James, if we take that approach, then the time-limited or auto-renew FOA, those things do not go into effect then because the policy has not done, or do they go into effect on their own without any further action on our part?
Nope, those would all be held up as well.
They would be held up, okay.
Yep.
This is Mikey. One of the things is James and I are on the implementation review team, and I can't remember which of the rest of you are, but we had a conversation with Tim and
Caitlin.
Caitlin.
Who is online, by the way.
Oh, Caitlin, welcome. Ah, there you are. That sort of said, look, given all of the other stuff that's going on for registrars right now, and we got into sort of a software development release strategy conversation where we said, look, maybe what we do is rather than dribbling these in one at a time, we sort of build a big release of policy that's a bit further out, that gives people a little bit more lead time to react and prepare. And that's sort of what we tested at the council, and we got these nods that said, not a bad idea, tell us more, So, Tim, go ahead.
I'm just going to try to channel Marika, because I know that she will also say there are many in the community that are expecting to see action, or I think at least a reasonable explanation for lack of it, because I think right now they think it's all staff just not doing anything. And so I want to be, while I'm more than willing to take the heat, I think doing it reasonably, doing it right is better than doing it fast. But I do think that if that's the case, we need to be prepared to either communicate it and or recognize that there'll be some people that are unhappy.
Yeah, and as, one of the non-contracted parties in the group, I would be happy to be a little bit out front on that, take some of the heat so that it's not just staff and contracted parties who are obviously in bed with each other and have been totally co-opted, blah, blah, blah. So, one of the things I would ask you, Tim, for some help on, and Caitlin, is if you all can frame a little bit of a message. I'm happy to carry that message, but I'm thinking I'm not quite aware of all the nuances of that, so it would be nice just to have a little bit of a message to surround that as we go forward. Empty queue. Seems like we have a scheme to go forward. We might still hit that final report target, which would be cool. But I guess in my mind, I had already dropped that target. So if it turns out we can't quite make it, I really don't want to push it too hard, because I think that this resolves several really complicated issues. And if we can do a great job, it fixes a lot of the things that IRTP was actually created to address. And I don't want to have a three-week swing in a schedule jeopardize that. So we'll give it everything we can. But, James, go ahead.
So two thoughts on that. First off, I think even the transcript will back me up. I said draft final. So I think perhaps we could, I did say that, so we can maybe put draft in parentheses in front of the final, and I think we're still on target. I hate to sound like a cheerleader here, but I think we can still do it. And secondly, I am basing that on one hypothesis, that like attendance at early morning or IRTP face-to-face meetings, the public comments received have not necessarily translated into weeks of work and major remodifications of the initial report into a draft final. So I am making that other assumption as well. But all of those things are have asterisks after them. Thanks.
Right. I don't know. We've killed some more time. That was good. We're up to 20 minutes before the hour. This 1 hour thing, this is like bending me all out of shape. Is there anything, you know, we can do the any other business thing? You know, Volker's, you know, I think we've picked up an action to check, and Tim has stepped into the breach nicely on that, but we should not lose that. Anything else that people want to bring up right now?
Just to confirm the next meeting?
Confirm the next meeting time. We can do that. And Christine just jumped into the queue, so we'll go without further ado.
Okay, thanks. This is Christine. I just had a question. I stepped out, so maybe you answered this question already, but I know we're going to submit the final or what, preliminary draft final or whatever we decided at the end of December, early January. Is there any, are we also looking at drafting a draft version of the TDRP itself by the same timeline, or just the report by that same timeline?
That's a really good question. We're back to the reason that especially Christine and I worked, and Lars worked so hard on the redrafting of the TDRP, is that the TDRP itself is not very well structured as a policy. And we do have sort of this endless loop. How close do we feel? I think this is between you and me, Christine.
Yeah, I think we can wrap it up in one or two more sessions. I mean, I can certainly take a stab at just throwing it together, and then we can discuss what I put together.
Yeah, because the reason we stopped is because we didn't want to go much further before we knew which way we were going.
Right. We had lots of registrant-related questions.
Yeah.
And now that we won't have those, it should be pretty simple.
Yeah.
The hardest part will be the bifurcation, right? The creation of the rules separate from the policy. That's probably the hardest part, and we did most of that already, I think.
Yeah. And the other thing is that when we extract the registrant from it, now we're essentially just rewriting and clarifying the policy and driving some of our recommendations into it. We're not creating that whole new mechanism.
Correct. The only thing I think maybe I'm hearing that we're still possibly adding is James was mentioning that maybe, or no, Volker, someone's mentioning about this idea of incentivizing registrars. So if we're going to create something around that, but you know, you can put in placeholder text for that. I don't think that's going to be a giant section or anything.
Yeah, and I think that then what we can do is let the policy conversation sort of shape that and drive it pretty quickly back into the details. Mm-hmm.
So I'm hearing you say we should try to.
Yeah, let's give it a try, because okay. I think it would be good to have that whole package out for the public comment period.
Probably.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's a good thought. James? Somebody else in the queue? You were pointing as though there was.
Yeah, me.
Oh, you. Sorry. You were pointing at... never mind. Go ahead.
No, I was pointing at my green button here, the Mikey mute button.
Oh. No, you're hurting me now.
The James okay. mute button thing. Don't encourage him, Volker.
So
going back to your comment, I think you were starting to take us to the confirmation of next meeting.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, we've laid out a pretty aggressive schedule, so we should discuss that. I will, however, point out that I will still be in the air coming back from this meeting on a regularly scheduled time slot of Monday. So just keep that in mind.
Yeah, this is Mikey. I will be back. In the check marks, give us a check mark in the Adobe room if you can make a meeting at our regular time next Monday, and we'll see. And if we have a bunch of green checks, then I can run a meeting. Okay, so we have green check from Holly, a virtual green check. We've got a bunch of red checks coming in. Not a bunch, but Larson, James, Bob, whoops. Yeah, I think it's looking like tough sledding. So let's skip next Monday's meeting, and we'll pick it up again in a week. Thanks for that, James. I would have forgotten that one, too. Okay. Cool. 2nd of December. I'm looking around the room for other stuff to talk about. We could tell jokes. I could teach you how to do 33 purple birds. We got almost 20 minutes left. Call it a day. Give ourselves a little bit of a break. Wonderful. Thanks, folks. This was really fun. I love doing these face-to-face. It is bewilderingly complicated for me. That's it. You can stop the recording. We're done. And thanks, all.
Thanks, guys.